Morning. It's good to be with all of you today. Glad to be here. We're taking a break from Ephesians because every once in a while I just like to study other things. So you can go ahead and turn your Bibles over to John 13, verses 1 through 5. And as you're turning over there, I want to ask the question, how do people know that you are a follower of Jesus? Like, what's the one thing that you could point to that proves beyond a doubt, this guy's obviously a follower of Jesus the Christ? In the days of Jesus, it was relatively easy to be recognized. You would follow Jesus around, you would obey him, and he'd be able to point to you and go like, yeah, that's one of mine. But now, in Jesus' absence, it's a little bit harder to verify those kind of claims. And depending on who you're talking to, there are a lot of different definitions of what a, quote, true Christian is. Depending on who you're talking to, true Christians are the ones who follow the traditions of the Catholic Church. True Christians, to some, are those who hold Joseph Smith to be a prophet. Those who adhere to specific political parties, worship in specific ways, teach and believe specific doctrines. I'll get that word right. Or maybe true Christians are just people that don't do the things that I don't like. Well, in John chapter 13, verse 33, Jesus actually gives us the measuring stick. He's about to leave his disciples and be crucified the very next day. And he says, okay, as I'm leaving, I really want you guys to get this in your head, okay? He says, little children, yet a little while I am with you. You will seek me, and just as I said to the Jews, so now I also say to you, where I am going, you cannot come. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. So you see it four times. Love, 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 love. We are supposed to love one another. We and the world around us will know that we are disciples of Christ through our love. But not just any love. You go around, just as there are many variations of what a true Christian is, there are many variations on what love means to people. Jesus says you are to love them in the way that I have loved you. That's the kind of love he wants us to demonstrate. And when we think of God's love for us, the clearest picture that we typically will have come to mind is Jesus out on the cross. He died for us. That's how we know he loves us. That's what Paul says in Galatians 2:20. He loves me to the point that he gave himself for me. That's an expression of love that we should all rightly aspire to. But I don't think it's the kind of love that Jesus wants his disciples to be thinking about right in this moment. The last time Jesus talked about love is in John chapter 13, starting at verse 1. This is the kind of love that the disciples have in mind when they hear the new commandment to love as Jesus has loved. John 13, starting at verse 1. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given him all things into his hands, and that he had come from God and was going back to God, rose from supper. He laid aside his outer garments and, taking a towel, tied it around his waist. And then he poured water into a basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with the towel that was wrapped around him. Now, I don't think it's really a stretch of the imagination when I suggest that washing feet is kind of gross to most people. If you've known me for any length of time, some of you have probably figured out I don't like wearing shoes very often. In fact, I only wear shoes about twice a week, Sundays and Wednesdays. When I'm here, on Wednesdays, we started switching over to where I was teaching the Bible class at my house, and this group in particular said, you need to put the feet away. We don't like them. And so here we are. I'm forced into the prisons of socks every Wednesday night in my own home. People don't like feet. And guess what? In the ancient world, it wasn't much different. In the ancient world, to wash feet was a job for the lowest of the low. It was even beneath some slaves. Which is why Peter is so scandalized around verse 8, saying, "You will never wash my feet, Jesus. That's just out of the question. That's weird. That's gross. Don't do it. I'll wash my own." Because how could Jesus, the Messiah, the Son of God, possibly do something like that? The cross, with all of its scandal, that wasn't the only scandal of Jesus' love. He got down and he washed feet. That's how Jesus served. That's how Jesus loved. And it's how he expects all of us to love as well. Guess what we're doing Wednesday, right? Okay? It's not a big show. It doesn't earn us praise. It is a simple and humbling act that most people would say that they are too good for. We like to express our love with the big gestures, right? The great poet of our age, Bruno Mars, wrote a song called Grenade. And in the chorus, he sings, "I'd catch a grenade for ya." That's actually how the lyrics are written. "Throw my hand on a blade for ya. I'd jump in front of a train for ya. You know I'd do anything for ya." And in the song, he talks about some of those any things he would do. "I'd put a bullet right in my brain for ya." So, you know, Bruno Mars, he'd do anything for ya. And so Bruno is saying, "I would do all these big and impressive things." And so many people have heard Mr. Mars and gone, "Wow, he loves his beloved so much that he would catch a grenade for her." I don't know what jumping in front of a train would accomplish, but nevertheless, he would do it, right? It's big, it's extreme, and it shows love, is what people say. And we say things like that as well. How many of us would take a bullet for the person that we love? I think we're all, you know, too shy to raise our hands in church, I guess. But all of us would, yeah, I'd do that, okay? That's an easy thing to say. And Jesus says that's a cool thing to do. Man has no greater love than this, that he would lay his life down for his friends. But are bullets, grenades, trains, blades, all of that, Bruno Mars stuff, are all of those really threatening our loved ones? I got to say, it's pretty easy to tell Arne that I'd take a bullet for her, because people aren't really in the habit of shooting at her. Will you wash their feet? Are we willing to love in ways that don't make it into the songs, that don't earn us praise? Will we love in ways that require daily commitment in the things that we do? What is easier to say to the person you love? "I'd take a bullet for you," or "I'll do the dishes every night"? Which one requires more of a commitment? Jesus loved his disciples so much that he was willing to do the small, inconsequential acts of love. And Jesus says later on in verse 14, "If I then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you an example that you also should do just as I have done to you." And we need to make sure that we are getting rid of any excuse that we might have, thinking that we are too big to wash people's feet. Let's go back to verse 1 real quick. And we're told that this is before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. So this is Jesus' hour. And John mentions it about 10 times, that Jesus' hour is coming down the road. It's kind of like a countdown to midnight. Well, here's Jesus, and finally the hour has come. It has struck midnight. The crucifixion is just around the corner. The entire reason for Jesus' coming down here in the first place is about to be accomplished. The work that he had been preparing his entire life for is about to take place as he faces the most important and the most crucial and critical day of his life. And what did he spend the night doing before that day? He was washing feet. How would you have felt on your wedding day if someone said, "Hey, after your wedding, I'm going to be out of town for a little bit. Can you pick up the dog and watch them for a week?" No. It's my day, right? I'm the groom, I'm the bride. It's about us today. I'm not running around taking out the trash. I'm not hunting down extra plates for surprise guests. I'm not worrying about any of that. I was actually really surprised on my own wedding day when people kept running around saying, what do you want? It's like, I'm not used to this kind of service. In fact, it's gotten to the point where we have bridezillas who are just overly demanding on their wedding day because it's their special day. And plenty of people go, well, it's excusable because it's their special day. How about asking favors for a guy who knows he only has a week to live? How proper is something like that? Well, here's Jesus, who is just about to die on the biggest day of all days. And instead of using that as an excuse to say, hey, I only got so much longer to live, how about you guys serve me? Instead of saying, I'm the important one, pay attention to me, it's my time to shine, he puts on the garb of servants, gets the water, and starts washing feet. Jesus wasn't going to let his big act of love prevent him from loving in what we would call the smaller ways. Let me invite you into just, you know, a common day at the Bradley household. We're expecting company over. I've just gotten back home from work, so I'm lounging on the couch watching The Idiot Box. Meanwhile, there's something on fire in the kitchen. Amelia's crying about something, and so Arian comes out, and she's just panicking. Morgan, can you please help me with whatever? Dishes, kid, anything. Can you help me with that? And I just look back to Arian, and I say, you know, I'd catch a grenade for you. Isn't that enough? How many of you want to try that at home? How many of you want to say, because I would do this big thing for you, I'm excused from doing little things? Try that out. You might have to catch a grenade, right? However great and grand we are out in the world, none of us is above Jesus. And there are so many things out there in the world that want to tell you that you are great, you are grand. You're too important at work to take out the trash. That's why you hire janitors. You're too important to have your own phone answered by you. That's why you have a secretary. You're too important to do all these different things. That's why you send out your employees to do them. And here's Jesus, and he says, I am the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords, and I'm getting down on my hands and knees, and I'm washing feet. A people of love are more concerned with the ones they love than themselves. A people of love don't come up with excuses to not love. Here's another excuse we might come up with. In verse 2, during supper, when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him. Now, it doesn't tell us explicitly right here, but you read back in John chapter 6, Jesus knew that Judas intended to betray him. He says, there's a devil among the 12. He knew it was Judas. He had predicted his betrayal multiple times. He knew that Judas was going to betray him that very night. He even tells him, go do what you're about to do. But we're never told that Jesus ever skipped Judas's feet. He washed his feet, and then he told him to go on his way. If we're to love like Jesus loves, that means we are loving in an unqualified manner, right? We like to divide the world into us and them. We like everybody like us. That's good, right? But them, I don't know about them. They're from somewhere else. They aren't in my political party. They hate everything I stand for. They love everything that I abhor. And like the lawyer who asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor, we want to divide the people into categories of those we should and those we're allowed not to love. And here's Jesus, and he's completely destroying that excuse. He washed the feet of the man who was going to have him murdered. Even if I'm right about them, that they really are the bad guy, we still need a love. Nobody gets credit for being nice to the people who are nice to you or loving the people who love you. Nobody gets credit for loving people who are really lovable. Who do you think is more impressive, my dad for loving my mom or my mom for loving my dad? Here's Jesus, and he says, the love of your enemies, that is what sets people apart. That is what shows the world we're different. All those Nazis in World War II, they had a love for one another. So all of us loving the people who are on our side isn't really exceptional. What's exceptional is when we try and bridge that hatred with love, with acts of service, when we do something that goes beyond. That's the kind of love that Jesus wants us to have. If we think that there's anyone that we're allowed not to love, then we're not disciples of Jesus because we're not loving like he did. And here's a third excuse, maybe. In verse 3, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands and that he had come from God and was going back to God, and then he goes on and washes feet, right? So Jesus knew that this act of service did not earn him anything. Jesus knew who he was. He had been sent by God. He was going back to God. He is the creator and owner of all. John 1:1, he is the Word of God through whom all things are created. And he could have commanded somebody else to do the washing, couldn't he? He says, hey, I'm at the top. Peter, how about you go around and wash everybody's feet? He could have done that. And Peter would have had to listen, and everybody would have been laughing at poor little Peter. But instead, Jesus takes that upon himself, and what did he get from that? Did he earn anything? What do clean feet accomplish? Maybe it was a little stinky up there in that upper room with the dirty feet, but overall, what did washing feet accomplish? Really, it didn't accomplish anything except for the sake of having clean feet. It didn't do anything for Jesus. It only did something for those who were washed. Jesus loved his disciples in a way that showed love not for his sake, but exclusively for their sake. We are to love for the sake of the beloved. It's easy to love those who love us because we get something out of it, right? I give kisses to Aryan. I get dinners every night. It's a good deal, right? I like it. I love you guys. I get invited over to Katie Mead's house and get free tacos. That was fantastic. Good deal. Is it easier to be friends with those who invite you over or who only wait for you to initiate? See, sometimes we only go about doing these acts of service because we're really just trying to hope for the exchange. We treat love like a currency sometimes. But Jesus expects our love and our service to be a mirror of God's grace. Take a look at Luke chapter 14, verses 12 through 14. And he said to the man who invited him, he's at dinner right now, says, when you give a dinner or a banquet, don't invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, lest they also invite you in return and you be repaid. But when you give a feast, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed because they can't repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the just. Jesus says, don't turn this into I invite you so you'll invite me and we get this great circle of hospitality going. Invite the people who can't do anything for you. Invite the people who have no home to invite you to. Show love to a people who are never going to love you back. That is, Jesus is saying that we are to love when nobody notices. We are to love when nobody gives it back. We are even to love when they only give us hatred in return. That's what Judas did to him, isn't it? That's the kind of love that Jesus had. That's the kind of love all of us are to have. We are to love freely and overwhelmingly, not because we get anything out of it, not because we feel good about it, not because it's just this fantastic thing that makes us feel wonderful. We love for the sake of those whom we love. And if we only love those because we hope to get rewarded for it, that's not a people of love. The love that Jesus shows is not an easy love to actually live out. There is a movie came out, I don't know, a long time ago, a couple decades maybe, A Knight's Tale. Heath Ledger, the guy who played the Joker years ago, well, he plays a knight in that, hence A Knight's Tale, and he's in a jousting tournament, and he's in love with this foxy lady, and he goes, I am going to prove my love to you by winning this tournament. And she snaps back at him, you will prove your love for me by losing this tournament. That's a little bit harder to do. And so during the tournament, he just sits there. And he gets blow after blow after blow, getting knocked off his horse constantly. He loved her enough to lose a tournament. Do we love people enough that we're willing to do the things that don't earn us anything but even cost us our dignity, our pride, our time, our money? Do we love in a way that Jesus does that isn't always glorious and praiseworthy, worthy of Bruno Mars? Do we love in a way that serves, even if it's rather embarrassing? But Jesus says that's how people know that we're disciples. Everybody has a perfect idea of love, but very few have a grasp on the kind of love that God gave us. If that's the kind of love you're struggling to show, that's the kind of love we want to try and help you with. You can do that. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing a word of encouragement?